B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way.
Oh, you better wake them up. Get them up, get them going. D&E, turn the page, get you over the hump Wednesday. And it is cold outside, 39 wet degrees in central Texas. Chillier than that in the outer line areas, but be a wet morning, but should be sunshine by this afternoon. Temperatures into the 50s, but to deal with a cold, wet morning for sure on this Wednesday. Plenty to do. We have a world champion in Major League Baseball and about 10 different subplots out of last night's Game 6 of the World Series. Dodgers finally seal the deal. They've been the most consistent franchise in baseball the last decade, and finally get a world championship to show for it. We'll certainly talk about what the goings-on in Arlington last night. We've got news from the NFL. Dez Bryant back into the NFL at the age of 31. Got the Cowboys making moves. We've got the Longhorns, of course, starting to eye their biggest test of the year so far, at least their highest-ranked team. They'll play on Saturday. We'll shine the spotlight on the Oklahoma State Cowboys as we get you rolling on what's going to be a fun Wednesday. 4 hours of fun and conversation begins right now. Appreciate you being there. Up early bird gets the worm, and hope you can ride with us all morning long, all day long, however you find us, on 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. And, of course, we are always streaming live and worldwide on your Horn app, your smart speaker, and at hornfm.com. Mr. Godbolt.
Good morning to the soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, the soldiers in the state of Texas, and, of course, all those that fight for us each and every day. Thank you very much for the great job that you do. It is chilly outside. It was chilly yesterday.
Ooh.
And it's kind of not funny, but, man, my fingers got frostbitten a little bit yesterday out.
Were you shoveling rock?
I was shoveling rock, and my gloves got wet. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, it's just maybe that'll get a little body heat going inside my gloves. About 20 minutes later, the tip of my fingers were, like, ready to fall off. That's how cold it was with the wind yesterday. So, and it's no joke again today. It really truly is. It was hard for me to believe it was in the 30s. I'm like, no, it's got to be 45, you know, or whatever. It was actually in the 30s, and it is right now.
Yeah, 39.
So, wind chill. If you do have a scarf, go ahead and put it on. Hoodie and a scarf today.
Yeah, wind chill. It will make it feel much colder with a blustery northwest wind that is continuing to howl. But again, by afternoon, supposed to clear up, sunshine. It'll still be cool, crisp, 50s, and the wind will be up a little bit. It's supposed to be really windy tomorrow, which, you know, it's never good when you look on your phone app and you can get the wind symbol.
Yeah, that's not good.
That means it's going to be really windy.
No, that's very confusing when
sun,
I see
cloud,
that.
You don't get sun, cloud, you just see wind.
No, I didn't get a temperature there. I'm just looking at, that's not good.
Well, and I am excited to be playing in a golf tournament tomorrow.
Cool.
Out of Falcon Head, and with, it's Woody Englander and the Comfort Crew for Military Kids.
Love them.
Annual golf tournament, playing with Quan Cosby and some others, but boy.
Oh, is Sergio coming along?
Maybe Sergio. I don't know, because Quan and Sergio Garcia
are like
bros now.
Yeah.
So maybe we get the green jacket out there.
Wow.
Because
he does bring the green jacket wherever he goes,
well,
right?
Maybe he can teach me how to play in the wind, you know what I'm saying? Because that wind is going to be up and out of Falcon Head tomorrow. But that's a good thing. It is the fall. It feels like the fall. Puts you in a good mood, I think. And I'm sorry about your fingers. I mean, you probably just had to put some gloves on over there.
I did. I had gloves on. That's the problem. They got wet at the tips. And I thought they would get warm.
Just the tip?
Just the tip. That's all. Just at the tip. Not in the middle of the hand. Just right at the tip of my fingers, which means probably you're old, you got bad circulation, but you can't get cold out there. And I'll tell you what, it is the season for pleasing, which means the lettuce rancher is almost ready to start.
I don't know where you're going with that, the season for pleasing.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Going with something else.
The lettuce rancher is ready. That's right. It's getting to be that time. Maybe this weekend.
Oh, boy.
Time to get the lettuce ready, y'all.
Well, it is cold. And, you know, Chris Bennett, our favorite tweeter and co-producer, who's now moved to
Washington
the great Northwest.
State.
He now lives in the – and he's listening right now, live on the Horn app. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. This guy is a dedicated listener. We can't thank him enough. But he says it's colder in August than it is in Washington, 46
degrees. In Austin, really? It's colder here?
Yeah, colder right here than it is where he is in Washington State. With about 46 degrees, he says. It's 39 here in Austin. Let's get to your headlines, trending topics. We have a world champion in Major League Baseball. Sharp vision, modern LASIK, believing is seeing, and you can believe it, L.A. Dodgers fans. You know, Major League Baseball, Dodgers have been the most consistent franchise in the game. Been in the playoffs every year since 2013. They went to a pair of World Series, but have come up short. Last night at Arlington, they sealed the deal.
Dave Roberts. That's strike three. Dodgers have won it all in 2020.
There it was, Joe Buck with the call on Fox last night. For the first time since 1988, Dodgers are the world champions of baseball. LA defeated Tampa 3-2 in Game 6 of the Fall Classic at Globe Life Field last night to clinch the series, earn the franchise's seventh championship for skipper Dave Roberts.
I had a crazy feeling that came to fruition, and it's just a special group of players, organization, just all that we've kind of overcome. I just knew that we weren't going to be denied this year.
As he was in the NLCS, Dodger shortstop Corey Seager named the World Series MVP. Chances are Game 6 will be remembered more for what the Rays did than L.A., specifically manager Kevin Cash, who pulled his ace Blake Snell in the sixth inning, even though he was cruising, had a 1-0 lead, just 70 pitches, gave up a one-out single, and he was hooked. L.A. immediately jumped on the reliever Nick Anderson, took the lead, a lead they never relinquished, and the series is over. You can also expect the bizarre Justin Turner situation to dominate the national conversation today. The Dodger third baseman was removed from the game last night in the eighth inning. After the game, it was announced that Turner had tested positive for COVID-19 and was in quarantine. Well, then Turner was not a part of LA's initial celebration when the game was over, but he was seen on the field masked and then maskless celebrating with his teammates after the game. In other news, NFL, Dallas Cowboys have traded veteran defensive end Everson Griffin to the Detroit Lions for a conditional draft pick. Reports it might be a sixth-round pick. Move gives the Lions, who have won three, or now 3-3, a pass-rushing threat they need. Also opens up playing time for Randy Gregory back in Dallas. Also yesterday, Baltimore Ravens signed wide receiver Dez Bryant to their practice squad. The 31-year-old three-time Pro Bowler has been out of the game for 2 years. Ravens hope he maybe can provide a physical possession-type receiver that their offense currently lacks.
This segment brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK, now offering all laser LASIK starting at $495 per eye. Sharp Vision Modern LASIK, believing is seeing.
And there you go. What a night. What a night in Arlington. The Dodgers sealed the deal. Kevin Cash, a goat. And the Justin Turner story, I would imagine, will be the national story, unfortunately, for L.A. But just a bizarre scene. I mean, the Dodgers get all the credit for Scrappy finding a way. You remember they were down 3-1 to the Braves. I mean, their season was on the brink going into a Friday night game 5. And the Braves, remember the Braves at that point had lost one playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Braves had been unbelievable. They mowed through their first couple rounds and then were up 3-1 on the Dodgers and looked like the Braves were going to be the team to represent the National League. And the Dodgers scratched and clawed and won three straight games to win that series and then finish this thing off. They really gave the game away in game 4 on Friday night, or Saturday night, I should say, and win this series.
Well, they got a lot of help last night, for sure. It was just odd, and I don't know how Cash tries to explain it. He tried to explain it. You know, he's done this before. That's the way they played all year, but it was just silly. It was one of those, you just got to have a feel for the game. There's nothing to that, taking your starter out who was cruising. That's just a feel. That has nothing to do with analytics. That's on you. I don't know what analytics.
The analytics tell you that the third time through a lineup, you know, the numbers increase significantly, and that has been the Rays' recipe to get to where they are. That they have this stock.
Not on this night, though.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, 2020 hindsight, but it's the way they've gone. But you're right; it's feel versus analytics, and the analytics said, you know, against Blake Snell, the OPS against, you know, the third time through a lineup increases, and so let's go get one of our fresh arms that's ready to get through the meat of this order one more time. That's what you're trying to do, is get through an order 4 times, right? And that's what the Rays have done. But obviously backfired last night, and you could see, I mean, obviously adding to the conversation was Blake Snell's reaction to it. It's the second or third time in the postseason he's left the mound just in an absolute fit because, you know, he's a pitcher. He wants to finish the deal.
He has a Cy Young winner.
And he was 9 strikeouts. He was, you know, in almost no trouble whatsoever to that point.
No, that whole group that everybody feared, he struck them out twice.
Yeah, he was.
Each one of those dudes.
Yeah, and he had a plan, obviously, was executing his plan. And the one-out single he gave up to Austin Barnes, which turned out to be a pivotal moment in the game because this is the back end of that lineup about to turn the thing over, and Austin Barnes, you know, if he gets Austin Barnes out there, he stays. But he gives up the one-out single, left the ball up, a little cutter that stayed up. Hit it in the center field. Just
didn't
kind of
have
soft,
many of those either.
Yeah, just a soft single. It wasn't anything crazy. And Austin Barnes, a light hitting catcher, anyhow. Well, you know, then that flips the order over. He goes and gets him, and Nick Anderson comes in, and you know, next thing you know, it's 2-1, and it happened so quickly. And then, of course, here comes the mob, which, you know, rightful. But it, for Kevin Cash's point, I mean, that's what they've done all year, and it's worked a lot. And he went to it. I would just say, to your point of the feel, and you got a guy on the mound who's dealing, who's feeling it.
Yeah.
I go back to the Augie Garrido statement. Let somebody be a hero, man. Let this guy's
he was.
Out there.
He was on his way.
This guy's out there to be a stud. This guy's out there to be a World Series hero. Let him do that. But
there was one out and one guy on base. I'm like, wait a minute. Is this a problem? Is there somebody on third or something?
No, I mean, you get a guy that get a strikeout, roll a double play. I mean,
the way he was going.
Yeah, there's a million ways out of that. And but the Kevin Cash's philosophy was, let's go get a fresh arm. Not somebody who's been out there, but it's only 70 pitches. Gosh, this guy's just getting warmed up. It felt like
75 pitches, that's it?
Totally efficient and ready to go.
Then he brought in a guy who's just been giving up run after run after run, who had a great season but just gave up a lot of runs when he came in as a reliever.
Yeah, Nick, he was really good in the ALCS against Houston. But, yeah, I mean, stick with your best. I mean, that's your best. That's your ace. I mean, he's your best pitcher.
Feel by a manager, that's all. It just backfired on him. It's too bad it was a World Series.
Well, and it's shades of last year, A.J. Hinch in 2019 when he pulled Zach Greinke in a later game situation to go get Will Harris, and Will Harris gave up the home run to Howie Kendrick, if you remember, in the Astros. This is Game 7 last year. This was to win the whole thing. Zach Greinke was cruising, and A.J. Hinch did the same thing. Went and got a reliever who came in and gave up a home run, and the lead was over like that. And, you know, you can debate the Greinke thing, but it was the same deal. One out, gives up a little single, in control of the game, and give it to a reliever. And you never know. You know what the guy on the mound has, right? You know the stuff your starter's got. You can see it. It's electric. He's striking. He's, you know, getting
everybody
a lot of
on TV and in the ballpark could see it.
Yeah,
and feel
he's getting a lot of swings and misses, and he's overmatching the hitters.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what the reliever's going to bring. You haven't seen him yet. It's a roll of the dice every time you go get another arm. Sometimes it works, but if you know you've got a guy on the mound that's throwing heat and is bringing it and is executing his plan, probably stick with him. And A.J. Hinch probably thinks the same a year ago in Houston. Will Harris gives up the opposite field home run. You know, in this spot, Nick Anderson quickly gave it up. And once they seized the lead, the Dodgers never looked back.
Well, and I'm happy for Kershaw, happy for Roberts. So, I mean, Roberts has been under a lot of pressure over the last couple of years. He's got the best team money can buy and hasn't won, and Kershaw has had such bad luck when it comes to World Series and playoff play. So, I mean, that was good. In a way, that's fine. Tampa, it's a little train that just kept on chugging, and they'll be right back at it again.
And their sub-$30 million payroll, you know, they do it.
That's just the way they're going to do it.
They do it differently. And, your point on Roberts. Roberts is probably fired if they lose this series.
Could be, yeah.
I mean, even if they lose this series, they're in the World Series. But this is the third time they've been there, right? I mean, they were there with the Red Sox. They were there against the Astros and haven't finished it. If they cough this one up or don't finish, probably make a change. And so Dave Roberts secures his legacy. And for Clayton Kershaw, not just to win a World Series, but be a pivotal part of it. Two wins in the World Series, 4-1 in the postseason run to add to his, you know, 2014 NL MVP.
Hall of Famer.
Three-time Cy Young winner, eight-time All-Star. You know, he's 2,500 strikeouts. He's going to the Hall of Fame regardless, but now he's got a World Championship. And then you get to the Justin Turner story, which is the most bizarre of them all. And Major League Baseball is going to have some questions to answer today. It shouldn't be the lead story, but in a pandemic, it will be. You know, they played this game in a bubble, this series in a bubble, instead of in home parks. And we know what a challenge it was to get this season going, right? I mean, go back to July or June when the players' union's fighting with the owners about money and where they are going to play a season. Well, here we are, the culmination of the season. And in the end, it's going to be this story that probably leads the not just the sports channels, but the news channels. Because Justin Turner... apparently Justin Turner had a positive COVID test on Monday.
Yes.
The test he took Monday. Now, it's Wednesday today, by the way, if you're not sure what day it is. It's now Wednesday. But Justin Turner, who's been a pivotal piece of the Dodger run, their third baseman, great story. You know, he's a cast-off from the Mets. They pick him up, and he becomes one of their kind of a heart and soul kind of guy. Well, according to Dave Roberts, the results of Turner's test from Monday came back in the second inning of Game 6. So second inning tonight, so 2 days later. This is a Monday test. The test finally results. They have hour rapid tests now. I don't really get that
15 minutes you can go get a test
right.
now.
Well, so he took a test on Monday that finally came back in the second inning last night. They then rushed a second test that he took on Tuesday at the lab. Like, they rushed the test to confirm it. And so by the eighth inning, they had two positive confirmed tests, and they pulled Justin Turner from the game in the eighth inning, and he sent him to quarantine. Right? Well, okay. Man, how does that happen? That leads to those questions. How does that go 48 hours without anybody figuring this out?
They would have tested that guy 25 times.
Well, they tested him Monday and Tuesday, and they don't get the Monday results till Wednesday. Then they have a Tuesday test on hand. They go back and double-check it to make sure that's not a false positive. It's not, and that's two tests. So he's out. He leaves in the eighth inning without any. You know, Dodger fans are freaking out. Like, why are we taking Justin Turner out? What the heck happened? Well, what's the deal? Baseball announces afterwards that he's out and he's going to be quarantined. Well, he wasn't there when they rushed the field and, you know, do the dog pile and all that goes on with the championship. He's not there. But then after everything settles down, there he is. He's back out on the field.
He's got a mask on.
Yeah, with his wife, with his little kid, and with his teammates. And then the mask comes off.
Yeah,
Then he's seen all
of hugging, the, he's hugging people, and celebrating and stuff.
Hugging teammates, and, you know, gosh, the number of questions that come, you know, think about this worst-case scenario, and we're not there, but, you know, if the Dodgers lose last night and this positive test comes in, well, now the Dodgers are in close contact with someone who's been, they could have all had to been quarantined. This could have, the World Series could have been shut down for a couple days at least to try to get this thing under control.
There's not much conspiracy to me for this. This is that they already knew this guy had it. This guy played throughout, and they knew it. And he said he wanted to play.
Well, this
they wanted him to play.
Well, this can't be answers from the Dodgers. This is going to come from baseball.
Yeah.
Because baseball is supposed to be in the independent body in this. And if they knew, then that's going to be a problem. They're going to be fined severely. At the end of the day, the reason he came back is his teammates were like, look, this thing's over. Come on, I'm back out here. We want you out here. We want you to be a part of this. There's no more games to play. The bubble's over. But, you know, people are going to claim he's putting people's lives in danger and health in danger. And he is. But the team was more wanting him there than the risk that came with it, because he was a big part of this championship. But yes, there'll be a lot of questions to answer of when they knew what and why the test took 2 days to come back positive.
You can go around to the clinic right around the corner and get that done in like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
There's something up. You know, there's something up with that.
Well, it's sketchy.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the season is in. NBA crowned a champion. The NHL crowned a champion.
And they're not taking a championship away
from
the Dodgers.
And now the Dodgers have won a championship. No, they are not taking a championship away from the Dodgers. They might charge a hefty fine to the Dodgers.
There's
going to
be money.
They'll gladly pay it.
Pick up their trophy and have a celebration later on, yes.
And, you know, at the end of the day, Fox is happy that they had the big market Dodgers in this World Series, even with a small market. It would have been a better series with Houston or the Yankees. But either way, Fox gets what they want, and season is over. But yes, the Justin Turner story it'll be that story that everyone's talking about on CNN,
for sure,
and NBC, and all the networks. Because how does that happen? And it's a fair question. It's not an unfair thing to figure out. But you're right. I mean, because the other side of that is they may have had to shut down the World Series for a week,
in
Game Six. Like, oh gosh, Justin Turner's positive. He's been out here playing. He's been in our dugout. By rule, the rules we put in place, we've got to shut this thing down.
It's crazy.
And they played through
it. Just crazy.
And the Dodgers win it. And gosh, can you imagine if they had lost last night? Somehow the Rays win. Game 7 may have been on hold for how long? I don't know.
Yeah, Kershaw must have been awful happy last night. I saw him looking up to the stars, looking up to the heavens, just as he's coming out from center field going, I got one. I got it. I got this big, big, massive piano and monkey off my back. I'm ready to go now. I can go to the Hall of Fame.
I can go to the Hall of Fame.
Yes, I can head to the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah, because there's a lot of Hall of Fame players in all sports that have never finished it.
Yes, ask Dan Marino what that feels like.
Charles Barkley, Karl Malone. I mean, we go on and on. And Dan Marino's a great example of, you know what the legacy is, but it's not tarnished. It's just not complete.
No.
Without a championship. And you know, for Marino, he only went to one Super Bowl. He never got back to another one.
But they thought he was going to be in many a Super Bowl
with
that team.
Well, this guy, Clayton Kershaw, has been in two other World Series. He's been in the playoffs every year for seven. He's been a driving force to it. And to see him come up big was big in his hometown. I mean, they're playing in Arlington, but, you know, he's from Highland Park, Dallas.
That's right.
Not far away, which is pretty cool as well. But, yeah, the Blake Snell story, the Justin Turner conversation, and that will drag on, but obviously at the end of the day, the Dodgers are world champions. So fans like Craig Way, our man Craig Way, voice of the Longhorns, he is And from Light the Tower, he's a huge Dodger, lifelong Dodger fan. And I heard the guy before us, who I know he's not for everybody, I heard him say something driving in that I agree with. They should have gotten Vin Scully involved in this somehow. I don't know how you do that, but wouldn't it have been neat to hear Vin Scully's voice last night, you know, maybe after the final out or during the ninth inning on Fox or something. I don't know.
Kind of incredible. That would have been nice, wouldn't it?
Because Vin, the legendary Brian, who just stepped aside as the Charlie Steiner takes over on the full-time basis, you know, Vin was with the Dodgers back in Brooklyn. I mean, that's how far Vin Scully goes back to, with Jackie Robinson and the Brooklyn Dodgers when they were the Trolley Dodgers. You know, that's and he's still going. He lives out in L.A. watching all the games with his wife.
Oh, believe me, he was watching every inning, crying like a baby.
Yeah, it might have been good to maybe hook that up, some type of camera crew or something. You don't want to jinx it because it's only game six. And if you all of a sudden bring Vin Scully in and you don't win it, then you got to go to game seven. I don't know. That would have been cool, though. Love me some Vin Scully. That is for sure. So, cool. Good game. The story about the Rays coach, a lot of people weighing in on that, says that's just a dang coaching mistake. That is absolutely right. It's happened back-to-back World Series now where analytics won over the feel of the game. Both managers, A.J. Hinch and Kevin Cash, they're going to live with that. You got to live with that decision.
Yeah, you do. And you've lived with it all season long, and you get to that part, it's just...
And by the way, we heard this year, Zach Greinke's still pissed. Zach Greinke, the Astros, still mad about it.
Oh, this guy is snow.
Blake Snell will never not be mad about that.
No, because he's, from what it sounds like, he's done that to him a couple times this year. During the course of regular season,
he did it in
his
postseason. Did it in the Astros season.
Yeah, and he's not happy about it.
He walked off the mound cussing. And it's their style. It's what they do.
And he complimented his manager afterwards, saying, this is what we've been doing. He's a really good manager. I just wanted it so bad. He said, I wanted to win a World Series. He said, but I got nothing. He said, this is a good manager.
The words, and that's that for fans, it's a shame because World Series heroes weren't built on analytics or what does Tom Herman call it, the binder?
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
Not built on the binder. It's built on individuals.
And the feel of the game.
Rising up and the adrenaline of that. And Zach Greinke wanted the challenge to dig himself out of a small hole he was in. Certainly.
Yeah, and a guy like Snell telling the manager, go back in the dugout. I got this. I got this. I mean, Bob Gibson would say, hey, listen, I got this. Don't you dare take this ball out of my
Gibson
hand.
Would have slugged him in the face.
You get back in
that
dugout.
He would have gotten across the first baseline.
He'd have met him at the first baseline.
Yeah.
He'd have run right over and said, go ahead, go back.
Well, no, and the manager wouldn't even have dared take a step out of the dugout.
That's true.
Against Bob Gibson.
Or Koufax or Don Drysdale. You're right. They wouldn't have come near the mound. With one guy on and you're leading in the sixth, and you only pitched 75 pitches? No, those guys would have, the minute you would have taken a step to the top of that dugout,
would have tackled him.
That's true. He would have never been able to get out the dugout.
Oh, man. Good stuff last night in Major League Baseball. The season over. Could they get it in was the question at the beginning, and now it's a done deal. 60-game regular season, 16-team postseason.
And at the end, you got a guy who is positive out there playing.
I know. What a way to cap it.
Yeah, man.
This says, can we all please recognize that positive cases mean very little in all these protocols are crazy. Data shows that COVID is nowhere near as dangerous as feared back in March. All right, well, of course, that's going to be an opinion. But for safety purposes, he shouldn't have been back on the field, whatever you want to say. And if he was on the field, he should have had a mask on and not gone near a teammate. Instead, Justin Turner is maskless for a lot of it, hugging on and kissing on his wife, which, okay, well, that's her call. But at that point, probably need to isolate. And, we're in the middle of a spike again for COVID here, if you're not paying attention, in October into March or into November. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Now, there are those that think this thing has passed. Well, not quite.
Not quite. But the Dodgers are champions, and we'll take your thoughts on all of those storylines and subplots throughout the morning on a Turn the Page Wednesday. It's our turning the page for a big football weekend as well. Longhorns and Oklahoma State. Longhorns have their hands full with the Cowboys. Cowboys have issues in Dallas. Here, Jerry Jones on his radio show yesterday told the host to shut up. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was a little over the top, and he had to end up apologizing for that.
Yes, he did. We'll get to that. Also, the other NFL news of the day, college football. It's a fun Wednesday. Be careful out there. Slick streets, cold temperatures. We're having fun with you on this Wednesday. Wednesday on the Horn, B&E with you. 39 chilly degrees. I shouldn't even say chilly. It's cold. Brisk with the wind. Grab a jacket this morning, coat even. Going to warm up, though, be in the 50s and sunny by this afternoon, and then the sun's going to stay out the rest of the week, it looks like. That's a nice thing, into the weekend. Should be in the 70s. We'll take that for sure, 71 on Saturday. Should be lovely for your Halloween as we count them down to the ghoulish holiday of Halloween. Will it be ghoulish for the Longhorns? in Stillwater, Oklahoma, becomes the question. Oklahoma State, sixth-ranked team in the country, boasting the conference's best defense. We'll hear from the coaches coming up, Tom Herman, Mike Gundy, as they're getting ready. Of course, this is Mike Yurcich, who spent 6 years as Mike Gundy's offensive coordinator before jumping off to Ohio State for a year. Now back to Texas. This is his return to Stillwater, running that Longhorn offense, and they've got their hands full, Buck. I mean, that's I'm trying to figure out what the biggest challenge is for Texas here, because it feels like Oklahoma State has the advantage in a lot of areas of this game. I mean, Oklahoma State leads the nation in quarterback sacks without blitzing by percentage. They have a great secondary, a very veteran secondary that's very versatile. They can man you up and play great coverages, they can, which allows them to be very multiple in their fronts to confuse your offensive line. And Texas, of course, has looked very confused on their offensive line at times this year. And then on offense, I mean, the offense really hasn't gotten cranking much outside of the Kansas game for Oak State. But, you know, Spencer Sanders returned last week, their quarterback, who's now a sophomore, and he really added a different you know, level when he returned to the offense. He'd been out since game one. He got hurt against Tulsa, and they kind of stumbled through some quarterbacks there for a while. But Sanders came back, and in the game against Oklahoma or Iowa State on Saturday, he had 235 yards passing and a touchdown, and he had 71 yards on the ground and a touchdown. So he brings that dual threat. He did throw two interceptions, Spencer Sanders, in that game.
Oh, he'll make some mistakes now. He'll overthrow some balls that'll go right into your hands. But we talked about it yesterday. Then the Longhorns guys have got to catch those. When they get overthrown, they can't.
Longhorns dropped two last week.
Yeah, they can't be tipped into your fingers and you drop those. You have to make those plays. I'm just trying to figure out what Texas can do. What is their best offense to control the football game? But I don't know what they do offensively, what's best for them, with the exception of going no huddle, let's go up-tempo. But you run the risk of three and outs because the quarterback and receivers aren't on the same page, and you can't afford a bunch of three and outs here, because if you give them field position, they'll take advantage of the field position. So I don't know what type of offense can all of a sudden, because you can't put in new offenses and all of a sudden say, we're going to be this power run game this week, and this is what we have to do against the number six team in the nation. You kind of are what you are. You got to minimize your mistakes. You got to take care of the football, and then you got to hope that your defense can hold on, because I think the Texas defense can hang in there, but I don't know what the Texas offense can do. That's the part I'm kind of still on a Wednesday. You know, it's a move on Wednesday, which I feel like, yeah, it's time to do, but I can't figure out what is it that they do good in order to get through this
defense. That's what I'm saying. What do you hang your hat on in a game like this on the road? There will be fans in Stillwater. It's a minimum capacity, but there are fans there, and they're right on top of you. There's not a stadium in the Big 12 or in the country that the fans are closer to the field. So whatever impact they can have, they'll have. But
I still believe Mike Gundy will have the officiating will be on the side of the home team in this one. Well, they're number six in the nation. I'm not trying to be a conspiracist.
Well, Texas has been one of the sloppier teams in the country.
Yeah, and if you're sloppy, it's easy for an official to penalize
football is a pretty simple game at the end of the day, and this is a simple conversation. The Longhorn offensive line has to play by far their best game. If the Longhorns are going to win this game, the offensive line has to play much better than they have. Because that's...
Yeah, or it'll be a jailbreak all day.
Or it'll be trouble. Because, again, you have a defense that's allowing 12 points per game, and that is even skewed by a late touchdown by Iowa State on Saturday that, you know, they'd be right at 10 points a game that they've allowed in four games. They lock you up on the outside, which allows their defensive... They can, by that number I just gave you, they sack the quarterback without blitzing, which tells you their pass rush is good. And the fact that the number of sacks that they do have tells you that they're doing a good job on first and second down to put you into pass rushing situations. So offensive line has to come to play like they haven't. And can you expect that from Herb Hand's unit? Can you expect them all of a sudden to just be this rock'em sock'em group that is leading the way?
You may be able to get a couple screens off. You know, they started off the game last week with a nice screen for 10 yards, but you can't do one and not do another one and another one. I mean, your screen game, really, hopefully they worked hard on the screen game with all these blitzes and all these different areas that they come out of, even with the front four getting a lot of penetration. He maybe dump one off behind them and get going maybe four or five times. But I've never seen this team do anything four or five times except for turn around and hand the ball off tackle.
Well, that's why I said
that's
on,
it, kind of. You know,
I mean, look, diving into these numbers for Oak State, and again, let's be fair to the numbers. I mean, the four games have come against Tulsa, West Virginia, Kansas, and then Iowa State. Iowa State's the best team they've beaten,
And Tulsa's not bad.
Tulsa's all right. Then yeah. They were a mess in that game. Wow, that was an ugly football game. That was the first game for both teams, if you go back to that.
Right.
And it looked like a first game. But yeah, I mean, they're not playing this isn't against elite competition, but, you know, Texas has not been elite. So, but this is why I said on Monday, even, and I'll say all week, this is where you identify your best 11 guys, get them on the field and get the ball in their hands. I mean, these are really good players and a really good team. Then a veteran team you're playing against, you need your most explosive players. Bijan Robinson is your most explosive running back. Josh Moore, Jared Wiley at tight end, Jake Smith. These guys need to touch the ball and touch the ball a lot. And you got to be creative with how you get the ball to them. As you're talking about screen game, quick passing game, jet sweeps, which you never do, and give the ball to a guy. You're gonna have to use your explosive players and attack this team, because you're not just gonna line up and play vanilla offense and move the ball consistently.
No, because you're not gonna be out physical. You haven't out physicaled anybody except for Baylor.
That's right.
Go ahead and practice. You haven't done it all year. I don't expect it to happen in a week. That all of a sudden you get on the road and become physical. That's just not what this Texas team is all about. I mean, if you can be in the game in the fourth quarter, if you can be winning or down 7 points, 7 to 10 points, you know, Sam Ellinger's got an opportunity to do something. But I just don't expect these receivers and Sam to be in tune with secondary guys that are really, really good.
Well, and
if you say that's their strength, then that's a problem.
I think they're excellent on the secondary.
Well, then that's a problem for Texas.
And they did a nice job last week against Iowa State, who's kind of they're an outlier in the Big 12. You know, Iowa State comes in with a lot of three tight end sets at 13 personnel. They've got the whole offensive line, three tight ends, one receiver, and then Breece Hall, the running back, and Brock Purdy. And they put a lot of pressure on you. They come downhill. They come physical. They come right at you. And they did a nice job. They gave up two big runs to Breece Hall, but that was really it in a victory. So now here you get this Texas group who, you know, again, what do they hang their hat on? What is their level of physicality?
Well, and plus, I never know who's healthy or not until the game time starts, and one guy that you think is healthy is not playing, or they do a good job of disguising their injuries there. So like Jake Smith is still obviously hurt because he didn't show any explosive stuff last week.
He's
got a hamstring that's just going to be bothering him throughout the year. It's not going to get him better. You don't get any time off now.
And then it goes to the...
Where's Brendan Eagles? Doesn't that guy still play?
Not very well. Doesn't get off press coverage, and that's what this group will do to you. This group is going to watch what... Because Baylor, having not practiced much and only having a few practices before they played the Longhorns, I'm sure they were watching film, but for whatever reason, Baylor did not press cover the Longhorn receivers, which if you've watched the Baylor game or the TCU game and the Oklahoma game, that's the recipe for slowing Texas' receivers down. They don't get off press coverage. Well, you played wide receiver, right? That's, if you can't get off the press, that throws the timing off, throws off your routes. Quarterback is waiting for you, and, just throws off the timing of your
Baylor
offense.
Baylor played safe offense, safe defense. They were just trying not to
vanilla,
get blown out.
Vanilla, yeah.
And they didn't get blown out. And I guarantee you their head coach, speaking of moral victories, that was a moral victory for Baylor last week for
sure
them.
Sure was. Well, middle of the second quarter, Dave Aranda had that game 6-3, right where he wanted it.
Yeah.
And that's where we gave Texas credit because they scored a touchdown before the half. And, Dave Aranda would say, yeah, we blew a coverage. Tariq Black, we didn't cover him. He ends up wide open, which set up a touchdown. And then give Texas credit coming out of the half to go down and score to go from 6-3 to 20-3 with two touchdowns and created that separation. They added a third, and it was 27-3, and the Longhorns win. But you're right. Baylor was just trying to hold on and get their legs back under them and play a football game. Oak State's playing for a championship.
Yeah, and this is going to be – there's a lot of pressure on Tom Herman for this one because there's a lot of talk about this whole substitution thing came back this week. You know, the eyes of Texas, that situation has cured itself for right now. But with the way the team – now people are now back to focusing on, dude, what is up with your football team and why do you do this and why do you do that and what's up with all these different changes and rotations? That's going to come into play. If Keonta Ingram is in that game a lot and the other guys are getting 8 carries in the game – if they don't win that game, well, my thoughts, I still feel the same. If Tom Herman loses another game, they need a new coach. I'm not even going to even play around with that. They have to get into the championship for me to think this guy can coach at a championship level and win the championship. And if they don't and they lose to one team and they play good and he comes back on Monday and says, boy, have we really progressed? I will be like, no, you haven't. You haven't progressed this year.
I think it's fair to say they progressed in the Baylor game, but how much of that was Baylor is a fair question, and that's why this game presents an opportunity for Tom Herman to say, you know what, we are progressing, but you got to see it.
You have to win the game.
Got to win the game, absolutely.
You can't go up there and lose
the
game.
No, it's about a win. I'm not talking about winning the game. That's the opportunity to upset a top six team. Whether they belong there or not, they are, and they're undefeated, and they bring a good defense and a veteran team. And the commentary on the program is this. This is the third time this year we've talked about a team that has dominated Texas in the last 10 years.
Right.
TCU, Oklahoma has dominated Texas in the last 10 years, and now here's Oklahoma State. They've won 7 of the last 10.
Yeah, you lose this game, and you're the same as you were 3 years ago when you got here. You're the same coach, this is the same type of team.
You haven't turned the tide on the TCU issue, the Oklahoma issue, and here's Oklahoma State. Again, they've won 7 of 10. Texas beat them last year, so Tom Herman does have that win from a year ago in September, early on in the year, where they forced a couple of turnovers from Spencer Sanders and took advantage, and that's back when Texas was playing well. We know they haven't been playing well since then. So we'll talk about it with you. It's Texas and Oklahoma State. Turn the page Wednesday. Your thoughts on the opportunity the Longhorns have. We'll get into this Cowboys mess and Jerry Jones. Also back to the World Series as well as Game 6, and a lot of folks weighing in on the myriad of top stories out of Game 6, the pulling of Blake Snell by Kevin Cash, the manager. The Dodgers themselves, of course, the Justin Turner situation after the game, and the COVID-19 conversation, which continues. We'll have all of them with you, plus our B&E fact of the day before the top of the hour. Get your thinking caps on. First, it's Dodger fan Craig Way.
Mornings with Bucky and Aaron.
Yeah, pretty clear. Jerry Jones didn't like being questioned about the Cowboys' leadership or lack thereof on a radio interview yesterday. Seemed like fair questions to me, but we will... And then he had to apologize. We'll get into Jerry Jones. Also, Tom Herman's thoughts on facing Mike Gundy. He's one of the longer-standing coaches in the Big 12. But World Series last night, Buck, here's why Rays fans. Are there any Rays fans? Or is it just baseball fans? Here's why baseball fans who were rooting against the Dodgers were mad. You realize Blake Snell is the first pitcher with 9 strikeouts through 4 innings of a World Series game since. So he had 9 strikeouts through the first 12 outs. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good. You've got 12 batters you face, you struck out 9 of them. Last time that happened was Sandy Koufax.
The lefty, yes.
In game 1 of the 63 World Series against your Yankees. You know what Sandy Koufax went on to do in that game?
Don't tell me he pitched a no-hitter.
15 strikeout, complete game effort, and a 5-2 win for the Dodgers over the Yankees. Instead, Kevin Cash decided to pull his ace after just 70-some pitches. Brought in Nick Anderson, who's allowed in a run in 7 straight relief appearances.
It's amazing.
Seven in a row.
He's a reliever. He's not supposed to give up anything. Plus, it was kind of early to bring a reliever in, right?
It was real early. It's 5th inning.
Oh. No, I'm not the big baseball fan. I was thinking that's kind of, isn't it like the 8th inning they come in?
Well, that's, again, this goes back to 2019 with the Astros and Zach Greinke, and that was in the 7th inning.
Still early, seems like to me.
Well, back in the day, but it's analytics over feel. It's this is what we do versus what you should do. And, you know, I know that the numbers tell you that the OPS, essentially the run production and offensive production of a team, escalates as you go through a lineup.
The third time, right?
Third time. And Blake Snell's numbers indicate that. But
those
same time,
dudes weren't, it wasn't like they had long fly balls. They didn't even hit him.
And then he gives up a one-out single, and that's it for him. And that's the binder, the analytics versus the feel. I believe, and somebody said, why do texted us and said, why do they even need managers if it's all about analytics and the geek squad upstairs? Well, that's true, and that's why baseball tends to hire managers now who are on board with the analytics. When analytics first became very popular after Moneyball and all of that, there were a lot of old-school managers who wouldn't listen to it. They're like, get out of my dugout. I'm doing this. I'm the manager. And those guys were pretty quickly exiled from the game and replaced with people who, embrace the analytics. And Kevin Cash is certainly one of those. And I would agree with Kevin Cash and the Rays over the course of a long season, playing the percentages is probably the right way to go. And it works. It works. You know, I mean, if we win 3 out of 4 times on this and we blow one of those games, but we win 3 others by following the numbers, then that's good for us. But in this game that you had to win, throw the binder out the window and go with the guy that's dealing and that you know is dealing.
And I agree with you this. That sounds just like the game that's going to happen between Texas and Oklahoma State. To throw out your binder. If you've got some fourth and whatever, forget your field goals. Go. You need to score touchdowns against Oklahoma State this week. And Or get a feel. I mean, depending on what you think the game is. If it's a third quarter and you're still right in the thick of things, yeah. You may have to take a field goal here and there. But to me, this is about touchdowns for Tom Herman's group because he doesn't get enough. Although they lead the nation or were leading the nation, against this particular team, It's about touchdowns. It's not about field goals. It's not going to be – I don't see this as a last-second field goal game. I see this as somebody's getting blown out up in here.
Yeah. Well,
one way or the other, somebody's losing by two touchdowns.
You think so?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, one or the other team is losing by two touchdowns, 10 or more points.
Well, look, here's the thing for Texas, and this is the scary part. They're 3-2, but they're 2-2 in Big 12 play, and this is easily the most complete and best team they've played.
Yes.
Texas Tech's not a good team. They've got all kinds of holes and a mess, and Texas, when they played them, should have won that game handily. They did win the game, but they should have won that game. TCU is not a good team. We know this. Texas lost to them. Oklahoma, when they played them, this is why you needed to beat them. They were scuffling. They were trying to find their way, and they had Ronnie Perkins situation on defense, and the running back situation's a mess, and they still hadn't developed a receiver, and you had them on the ropes, benching their quarterback, and you couldn't finish the deal. Then you turn around and play a Baylor team that hadn't played in 3 weeks and hadn't hardly practiced.
Yeah, you don't even know what your team is.
Now you're playing a team that's legit. I don't care if you're overrated at 6 or whatever they are.
Right.
This is a team that's got, and they got their quarterback back last week. They've got quarterbacks. They've got a running back who's All-American caliber. They've got a receiver that's among the best in the conference. They've got a veteran O-line, a veteran defense. This is a team you have to go beat. You know what I mean?
That's like what I said. Field goals ain't going to matter.
Yeah, we've talked about Texas beating itself in a number of these games. You can go up there and play a good game for Texas and lose.
Oh, no, you can play your best game. Your best game so far this year is not good enough to beat them.
Because they're good. And that's you haven't been able to say that about any of the teams Texas has played yet. Hey, they're really good. Well, Oklahoma State might not be great, but they're really good. I mean, they're good in a lot of phases. And Texas has to go counter that, and Texas has not been good in all their phases.
Yeah, there won't be any excuses for Tom Herman come Monday. There won't. There's not an excuse he can use. He can't use the hurt. He can't use the COVID. He won't be able to use. We didn't have enough practice for special teams. To me, you just need to go win this game.
And his teams have fared better as an underdog than the favorite. We know that. And this is typically the time when his teams rise up, and for whatever reason, exceed expectations, because I know there's not a lot of optimism for the Longhorns going to Stillwater.
Yeah, and the last time he was an underdog was at Oklahoma, which their coach taught their players a bunch of different lessons during the course of the game and still won the game.
He benched their
quarterback, and they still won the game.
And then they turned around and torched a bad TCU team.
Or just torched them.
After their bye week. All right, so we'll talk plenty of Texas football. We'll get into this Jerry Jones conversation. Hear from Tom Herman coming up and the Jerry Jones ECU on the radio yesterday, but a couple other notes. How about this? Dodgers, just the third team in the history of baseball. You know, in 1913, ERA became a real thing that they started to track. The Dodgers now the third team now, to lead Major League Baseball in team ERA, home runs, and runs per game. The other two, the 44 Cardinals and 27 Yankees.
Wow.
I know this was a shorter season, but that's still quite the accomplishment. Corey Seager, the eighth player to win both the LCS and the World Series MVP. Mookie Betts, the first player ever to win an MVP and a World Series title with two different franchises before turning 30 years old.
Glad the Red Sox gave him up.
And Clayton Kershaw became the third starting pitcher to earn two wins and strike out at least a third of the batters he faced in a single World Series since who? He's just the third ever, but the first since these two Hall of Famers. Those will be your answers to our B&E Fact of the Day coming up. Which pitchers does the Texan Clayton Kershaw join? Pretty elite company, to say the least. And we'll also continue these conversations in the morning. Grab your jacket on your way out. It is cold outside. Be careful on the highways. They are slick. And we're getting your page turned and up over the hump on a Wednesday here on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming, always, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com on your smart speaker as well.